Have you ever wondered how a song is made? How it starts? What happens during the recording process? How does an idea become that beautiful 3-minute thing you hear on the radio? My name is Emmeline, and in Journey of a Song, I take you on a tour of a musician's creative process, from the very first notes to the final, fully produced progression. As a singer-songwriter and an independent recording artist, I am intimately familiar with the magic of music creation, but I also know that each song has its own sacred story. Each week, I'll be talking to a different songwriter as they pull back the curtain on a favorite composition, beginning with the acoustic version of the song and ending with the final recorded product. In between, you'll hear a conversation about the inspiration behind the song, the decisions made in the recording booth, and the many ways in which music reflects and informs our emotions and our lives. This week, my guest is 17-year-old singer-songwriter Remy Riley. A native of Texas, Remy began writing music when she was just 5 years old. Remy released her first EP, the self-titled Remy Riley, in 2018. Since then, she's performed hundreds of live shows, released singles with the likes of the Vandaliers, and been nominated for multiple music awards. Today, she discusses her timeless tale of heartbreak, No One Knows. Welcome back to Journey of a Song. My name is Emmeline, and my guest today is the immensely talented Remy Riley. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing amazing. How are you, Emmeline?
I'm so good. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so happy that you're here. I'm really excited because we're going to get to share with our listeners the whole story behind your beautiful song, No One Knows.
Yes, ma'am.
And they're going to hear the acoustic version right now.
Give me new eyes. Still won't change my mind. Can you redirect the time? Where his face doesn't come across his eyes. Why does everything turn into war, babe? Making my friends and me. Tried to come back, but you bore me. Still seem to be ignoring the expressions that enough on my face. Taking it, but don't do anything. This isn't what you told me. Why wasn't I your only alone? No one knows. Singing no. Never been my friend, but he was feeling kind nice and gave me this hate paradise. Well, why is every day another bad face? Thoughts of you they die can't raise. Try to come back, but the morning still seem to be enjoying the expresses that are not on my face. Take it, but that won't do anything. This isn't what you told me. Why wasn't I your only alone? Change my mind. Can you redirect time? Where his face doesn't come across these lines. Oh, no one knows. No. Oh.
That was so beautiful. We were talking a little bit pre-show that, you know, the odd thing about quarantine is that you finish playing and nothing happens.
Yes.
And crickets. And live music is coming back. But when it shut down, you and I were supposed to play a show together at a little venue in Plano called Cafe Bohemia.
Yes, we were.
And Miss Evie was kind enough to let us shift that online to keep everybody safe. But that was kind of the first experience, at least for me, with online playing.
It was. It was my first time really like getting into that whole groove of, oh, this is the norm for a while. This is what's going to be. And it wasn't all that bad because it was more, I will say, I did enjoy doing the online performances more when I had somebody else doing it with me. You had someone to chat back and forth with instead of texting. So it was better to do it with you because I believe you're the only person I ever did one with.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I did much more. I did like online open mics and stuff, but like I really don't think I did much more after that. I was like, I really can't do this.
It is a really awkward experience. And you are an artist who plays live a lot.
Yes, yes.
So you're used to that energy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And having an audience like respond to jokes or respond to, because both you and I crack a lot of jokes in between songs.
We sure do. That's why it was good to have you, because we could go back and forth. And I was just telling Emmeline, I'm like, why isn't anybody laughing at us?
We're hilarious.
We're hilarious.
It's so true. And it's funny, right? Because I think when you write deeply personal songs, which is something that you do, there can be a sense of nakedness on stage. But when you become friends with the audience, when you crack jokes, when you talk to them, you endear yourself to them in a different way so that it feels a little bit more comfortable being that personal.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when the songs have this such dark meaning to it, and then you tell them what it's about and then you're just silent. It can be very awkward. They're like, okay, nice one.
But I think one of the things that I've always appreciated about you as a songwriter is that you aren't afraid to go to those dark places. Like, you aren't afraid to explore anything in your music. And I think that fearlessness is something that is a real testament to who you are as a songwriter and how you capture the human condition.
Wow, I really appreciate that. That's deep. I appreciate that, Emmeline.
I promise we'll only get deep so much. But that's the balance, right? Is,
yeah.
Like you said, when you're going to write a sad song, if you crack a joke, it makes it more comfortable for the audience. And you don't have to live in that sad place. And you can demonstrate to them, hey, it's okay to be sad.
Yeah.
And it's okay to like live in those dark feelings. And it's okay to be contemplative or to be frustrated or to be the whole spectrum of emotions. And you can still get done with that feeling and laugh about it.
Exactly. It's almost as if it's a coping mechanism, because like when you sing a song that you wrote about your own sadness and someone comes up to you after a show and they're like, oh, I really related to that. It's a great feeling, because not because, oh, you went through that pain too, but it's like you can cope with other people. It's like a healing process almost.
It is absolutely like a healing process. You and I talked a little bit at the beginning, pre-record, about how valuable and how beautiful those conversations are.
Yes.
Knowing that you've managed to capture a common experience in a way that resonated with somebody else is a really beautiful gift.
It's a beautiful thing to be able to connect with another human, even make them cry with you. It's like you brought that out of somebody. It's like, wow, that's kind of cool. And it's not even meant to be in a negative way. Like, oh, I made them cry. No, right. It's like, wow, I made them feel something. And that is beautiful. Good or bad. It's all part of the process.
Absolutely. And I love that you said cry with you, because I think that's such an important distinction between,
yeah,
like, I made somebody cry alone in the corner by themselves. And like,
yes.
And I made somebody cry with me, so that suddenly we were sharing in this process of catharsis.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, it's more of like, I remember this one time, I will never forget this show. It was at Club Dada and I was opening up for Haley Reinhart, and she's amazing talent. And this woman came up to me. I was going through a really hard time at the time. And she started saying all these things. I forgot most of the conversation because it was very long. But she said to me something like, you are an asset to the human race. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I started bawling my eyes out. And it was like one of the first times that like a person had made me cry at a show. I'm used to like it the other way around. But I started bawling, and I just couldn't stop crying because of how kind she was. And just knowing that I had connected with her and made her feel all those things, it was like I was crying with her, because I was.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know, I feel like it should be a group effort.
Well, and that's a really important thing. You know, we talk a lot about this on the show, but music is a safe space to put your feelings. Like, it's a safe space for everybody. And I think as songwriters, we know that because we live in our feelings a lot, especially when we're writing. We live in these dark spaces, or we live in these really happy spaces, and we allow ourselves to feel wholly and completely and unapologetically. But there aren't a lot of places in normal daily life outside of music to feel that way.
No.
You know, like if you decide that you're going to go fill up your car, or to your point, your fancy new van. but if you decide that you're going to go fill up and you're standing there at the pump and you just start sobbing or you start laughing hysterically, like, that's not necessarily a place where other people are going to be like, wow, great idea, I'm going to do that too.
No, they're going to be like, does she need help? Like, no, but it's so much more normal and comfortable in an art space. And that's why art is the best thing on this earth.
Amen, sister. Amen. I think that's absolutely true. And I think it's always beautiful when people come to a show and feel that. And what a cool thing. Let this be a sign to all of you, if you're listening, as live music starts to come back. If you're wondering to yourself, should I go up and say something to the artist? If I connected with a song, like, should I? Please do.
Yeah, exactly.
Please come up and say hi. Please come up and tell us your story, because that connection is a big part of why we play music and a big part of why the online shows were so awkward.
Very, very true. It's the online ones are, they're something else. I mean, some of them have been really great. I will say my favorite online show that I've had so far is the one I did for TWU for the college students. And it was a live stream on their page. And I had such a great time connecting with the people, my words. There goes my cat. The people. And it was a great experience. I think that was my favorite one.
It's a testament to the strength of music that you can even connect through that medium. That's so cool. So No One Knows. Let's chat a little bit about this one, because this is an older song for you. It came off your first EP.
It did.
So what was the impetus for composing this?
I remember... You know, it's a good thing I picked this song, because I remember exactly what I was doing the day I wrote it, which doesn't always happen. Sometimes I forget completely when I wrote a song or what I was doing. I just know it's there. And I'm like, where did that come from? All I know is that I wrote it. however, for this one, I remember what caused me to write it, what I was feeling that day, and how fast this song came out. It was almost like I didn't have time to write it down. The words just came spilling out because of how hurt I was.
Oh, Remy.
It was the first, like, this is going to sound ridiculous, but bear with me. I was a middle school girl. I did not know any better. Still don't feel like I do, but that's totally okay because I know I have time to grow up. I was a middle school. And it was my first relationship, and it had gone terribly wrong.
Oh, no.
And so I was heartbroken. I was like, oh, this is my first love. Like, oh, my goodness. Like, I can't believe that this happened. This is so unfortunate. And I went home that day from school. I was in eighth grade. Oh, my gosh. What a time to be alive. Eighth grade. I came home, and I was sitting in my game room, and it was just empty in the house. Nobody was home. And I started playing I was like, that sounds kind of sad. All right, let's go with it. I didn't want it to be a sad song, though. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be like a, well, what can you do about it? You know, like, we're both young. It's not supposed to be like, it's supposed to be a learning experience. And plus, many people go through that, whether they're 14 or 36, you know? I knew that it would have been relatable. So I started writing the song and wanted it to be a song about, like, it's not supposed to be perfect. And it's kind of like a reassuring song. Like, it's sad, but it's like, it's supposed to be comforting. Like, it's okay to go through that. And it's okay to feel it because it's life. And you know, at heart, we all deep down are still that child. And it's okay to feel like you don't know. Nobody knows. That's kind of the gist of how the song was written.
And love is sort of a unique thing, especially in that you get it wrong until you get it right. And then when you get it right, you're done.
Mm, yeah.
So like once you get it right, you can't go apply that knowledge elsewhere. You can't be like, yes, yeah. And now I know how to do this. So I'm going to go do it again really well. You're like, oh, well, that was fun.
Sometimes I wonder whenever I get it right one day in like 20 years, I wonder if like the songs will be happier or if they will be. I just know I'd get some inspiration out of that. I'm like, but for now, I'll just keep getting heartbroken and pop out these songs. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I am just happy with my guitar.
I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing, though, right? Is like, that's a lasting relationship in your life, because when this relationship went wrong, you came home and you were like, no, now it's going to be me and my guitar in the studio.
Yeah, exactly. And my piano. My piano got me through some dark days, let me tell you. Man. Yeah, that's kind of how that song came out to be.
So for you, it all started with a riff.
Yeah, it kind of did.
Just you kind of grooving on those chords.
Yeah, I was just kind of like going through the motions with the chords and the line, give me new eyes, I still won't change my mind. It's kind of like, I can see this in a different point of view, but I'm still going to feel the same way about this person, and I'm still going to feel the same way about my feelings, because I was so young and I didn't process anything. I just was like, it's happening. And it was not, I think a lot of people go through that, like as kids and like young love and stuff. But that one relationship had caused me to write the whole EP. So I was kind of grateful, and it's still a really good thing to write off of that cluelessness, that innocence of a child that just does not know how anything works. And you get up to being this age. I'm 17 now. I turn 18 in October. So crazy to me that I'm actually going to be a legal adult. I still feel like 18's a kid, but whatever. I'm at this age now, and I still feel that cluelessness, and it's okay. And that's kind of what I'm writing about. Like, I still have no idea, and they tell me, all these adults tell me that are married now, they tell me you won't know until you know, like you said. And that's totally okay, because no one knows. It's not only about that relationship, but it's also about that unknowingness about life. Like, it's going to be okay, and everything will work out. My dad always tells me, as long as you're breathing, there's hope.
Oh, I love that.
I truly believe in that, because if you're breathing, you're fine. You have your health. You have everything. You can get through things, and it will be okay no matter what the circumstances, because you yourself are still breathing, and you yourself are going to get through.
Yeah, there's this beautiful Chris Cleave quotation that says, scar doesn't form on the dying.
Mm-hmm.
Like a scar means you're alive.
Yeah.
And I, you know, you talk a lot in the song about appearances and the way things appear, and then how difficult it can be to translate the appearance that you perceive to someone else who isn't in it.
Yeah.
But I think that I don't necessarily know that that's characteristic of just young love, right? I think that's so many relationships in life, because sometimes, especially as emotional songwriters, right? We allow ourselves to be swept up in these situations, and there's a beauty to that surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it ebbs, when the beauty of it, the swell of it, the thing that swept you up recedes like the tide, you have that moment where you do feel a little bit empty. And I think that's a thing that everybody feels, you know, through the spectrum of time, because love is great when it's there, and it's an ache you feel when it's not.
Exactly. It's not even, like you said, it's not just like young love. It's like, I've had adults tell me that they still get like clueless feelings with their relationships, or they don't know what's going on. And they tell me, well, I had this one girl at my show, she listened to my song, and she was like older than me. And she said, well, sister, you better get used to it. And I was like, no, I'm not getting used to it.
You're like, don't tell me that. Tell me it gets better and I'm going to figure everything out.
Yes. No, the bar is up here now. We are not getting used to that.
I think that there's this misconception when you're younger, because adults are very good at perpetuating this charade, that you turn, you know, 18, 25, 30, be it whatever age, and then all of a sudden you have it all figured out.
Oh, yeah. It's such a misconception in life.
And I remember calling my mom right after I graduated college and being like, adulthood is not any different than childhood was, except you're expected to have more things figured out. And now you owe money all the time. And you do get to pick what you eat. So that's good. So like on the plus side, you can have ice cream for dinner. On the downside, like, ice cream costs money.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, no, sweetie. Like most of the time we don't have it figured out. And I'm like, then why did you tell me you did? Why don't we just tell children? Why don't we just tell each other? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Nobody knows. No one knows.
Exactly. It's so like, just live your life, because not everything, you don't have to know all the time. It's something I really need to tell myself right now. So I think this interview is very relevant to how I'm feeling in life right now, because I think that everybody's always asking me, what are you going to do for college? Because I'm going to be a senior next year. They're always like, everyone just pounding it down me. Like, they're like, what are you doing? Well, I don't know. I can play piano though. That's what I do know. And I can write a song, and that's all I want to do. But everybody else is like telling me, oh, you need to take your chemistry knowledge and put it out in the world. And I'm like, you know, yeah, chemistry's cool, but I don't know if that's what I want to do with the rest of my life. Like, I could do that on the side, but like music is forever.
Amen to that. And, you know, there's not a single decision in the world that you can't, well, there are a couple of decisions in the world that you can't unmake, but they are few and far between. So I think one of the things that it always helps to hear, and one of the things that I appreciate about the song is, A, yeah, no one knows. Like, really, no one knows.
Literally nobody knows.
And that can be a reason to feel alone, but it can also be a reason to feel, like you said, comforted, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not alone and you're not knowing.
Yes.
But it also means that you have the freedom to experiment, because the certainty we think should be there isn't.
For sure.
So you can pursue chemistry, you can pursue music, you can, you know, take a year off, you can go to a college in a completely different state, you can go to a college next door. And if you hate it, you can change your mind.
Exactly. That's what my mother told me. She goes, you know, college will always be there. But she goes, you right now should go with what your gut says. What you're feeling. And I don't feel like college will, you know, I mean, yeah, I want to go get my basics done, but like going for an actual like degree in something other than music is like crazy. Like, no, why would you do that? What? For validation from other people to think that you're doing the right thing? No, the right thing is what you think is the right thing. And you have to trust your gut. Because, yeah, it's a little embarrassing when all your friends are going off to these really amazing colleges and they have their life planned out. And you're like, I have a van and it's got my name on it.
But I still think that's pretty cool. I wouldn't hate on the van. The van is pretty great.
I mean, it's got a rainbow on it. So
it has a rainbow. It has the Remy Riley logo. It's very shiny.
What more do you want? It's like I think that there is, like, that's what I wanted overall with the song, was the comfort and not knowing, the comfort in sadness, because if you look hard enough, there is a comfort in knowing that it's gonna be okay, and you don't always have to know all the steps to get there. You just go on with the journey. Go with the flow. Because it will always end up okay.
As long as you're breathing, there's hope, right?
Yep. As long as you're breathing, there's hope.
I love that. I love how parents give us adages that we get used to hearing over the course of our lifetime. And then later, you know, we get a little older and we're like, oh, that's actually really profound.
Yeah. My dad had always, you know, told me all these advice. He always gave me advice growing up. And when I was little, I used it on like really small topics like, oh my gosh, I like left my toy at this daycare place. Like, oh my gosh. And then now I'm like, oh my gosh, that has so much more meaning to it now. It's like you grow up and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And ideally, as songwriters, that's what we put into songs.
Yes.
Is a line that lives with somebody and that says to them, as long as you're breathing, there's hope. Or that says to them that no one knows and that's okay.
Yeah.
Is there a line in this song? I mean, because you've been playing this for 3.5 years now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Longer, because it takes time to record these things. Mm-hmm. So you've had a chance to sort of grow up with this song, and the song has had a chance to grow with you. Is there a line that hits differently for you now than it hit when you first wrote it?
Well, I think it's always that when I'm on stage, it's the most simple line. No one knows. The way I sing it, and it just keeps going on, and it echoes through the mic at every show. I'm like, it reminds Callie, Miss Callie Cat, not right now. When I sing that song and I say no one knows, it's a refresher in my mind. Remy, chill out. You don't have to know. It's okay. Yeah. And it's that reminder. The rest, like the verses, are kind of talking about, you know, a little bit about the relationship and my relationship with my friends too. Not even like in that way. Like, it's just like, why I thought these were my friends, but they're betraying me, you know, like middle school girls, you know how they can be. Yeah, they're not the nicest. They're another breed, but, and for you, all those middle school girls out there that are not, I love you and keep doing what you're doing. Do not do that. And I just think that no one knows is the line that hits differently for me now, because it's really refreshing to hear it. Because like you said, I grew with the song, the advice that our parents grows with us. That same advice that I wrote down for myself 3 years ago is still relevant to me today, whether I like it or not. And I just have to remind myself it's going to be okay, and it's okay to not know.
Yeah. I want to call attention to something you said, which is that middle school girls, right?
Yes.
Can be catty. I think one of the things that I appreciate most about the Dallas music scene, and you and I have talked a little bit about this before we hit record, because you and I have played a number of shows together.
Yes.
It's been super, super fun. I think there's this misconception sometimes, especially in middle school, that the only way you get to the top is by cutting other people down.
Exactly. And it's so not true.
And you talk about some of that fakeness in the verses here. Some of this kind of, you know, this idea that appearances can be deceiving, this idea that looks aren't everything. Mm-hmm. And this idea that people get judged on that.
Yes.
Was that something specific to this relationship, or was that something, to your point, that you were sort of feeling based on the social situations you were encountering?
I think it was a point on a little bit of both, actually, but mostly the other people. Like you said, with the Dallas musicians, we all bring each other up. It's no doubt about it. I have never been to another music scene and seen what I see in Dallas. I see a group of people who truly want in their heart to see each other succeed. And I don't know about other people's experiences, but I've never been in a situation where I've had beef with another musician or anything. Like, I really haven't. But I go to, like, Nashville or other little towns around, and they always say, oh, that girl that's about to go on stage, we don't like her. I'm like, why? Like, she sounds great. Like, I don't – it's so not, like, true. What is putting down someone going to do? It's going to make you look bad. It's going to make you look immature. But it isn't going to elevate you. What elevates you is to help that other person grow. Because like you said, you learn from others. No matter what age you are, you're going to learn something. And yeah, I totally agree with what you were saying there about the lifting each other up. And sometimes that's how it is in middle school. They think that if they put a girl down, it'll make themselves feel better. But later on in life, they're going to feel so guilty and immature for what they did.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one of the, to your point, like that's one of the most beautiful things about the Dallas music scene, but especially about the women in the Dallas music scene, because I feel like there can be times where women get a reputation that is sometimes unjustified for being catty. But here, I think maybe it's because there are fewer of us, but I feel like the female musicians in Dallas celebrate and love each other. And because there's not this mindset of scarcity, this mindset that only one person can be at the top, like there can only be one winner. And, you know, that there's somehow a limited number of success stories that can come out of the city. I think that when you share that spotlight, it's amplified. And that's something that I've always loved about seeing you at shows and seeing your music in practice, is that you're always excited to interact with the other musicians. And there's never that feeling of that girl on stage, we don't like her.
Yeah, no, there's never been that for me. Like, I've never been to a show with multiple artists and been like, ugh, I hate that person going on stage. Like, why are they even playing? Like, no, I want to clap for them and I want to hear what they have to say. It's like, I get so excited that Opening Bell has those themed nights every month, because you get to come back with all your besties and you get to hear them play iconic songs. And it's a great time without fail every single time. And I think it's beautiful because we've done it so many times with the same people that we like all formed these relationships with each other. We all know each other and we get so excited to like see each other every time. And I think it's a beautiful and supportive environment. And I think more stuff like that needs to happen to normalize that.
Yeah, absolutely. Not just in music, but in life.
In life. Because my mama always tells me in the workspace, it's always going to be that one coworker that you don't see eye to eye with. But sometimes you'd be surprised that person you don't see eye to eye with may end up being the person that teaches you the most.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I think that's definitely true. That's really beautiful. For those of you who are listening who aren't familiar with what Remy says when she means themed nights, is Opening Bell Coffee, which is a coffee shop here in Dallas, Texas, but a wonderful listening room if you're a touring musician and looking for somewhere to play. Opening Bell Coffee does a tribute night once a month. And the past weekend, Remy and I played together at a Motown tribute. And I believe the next one is going to be One Hit Wonders.
It's going to be funny.
Have you chosen your songs yet?
I haven't. I'm like, oh, I don't know. But I think that's going to be the best.
They are hosted by Steve Jackson and Pascal Hall, who is the incredible owner of Opening Bell Coffee, who has done so much to support local musicians. And yeah, it is a really beautiful way for musicians to connect. And I think sometimes there's this myth that we're too good as songwriters to sing cover songs.
I know. What is that?
Where do you think that comes from?
I'm not sure, but I know some artists that tell me, I know a few venues too, that I think it's because they said something about they don't own the rights or whatever, but right. I think that's weird. I don't know how that works, but that's okay. But they're like, oh, you can only play originals here. Some places say that. And some artists say, oh, I don't do covers. And I think to myself, well, sometimes the crowd's going to need some covers. Like, they don't know your songs and you got to say something familiar. They'll love to sing along with you. Crowd participation, which is something you do very well, which I've learned from you. I've learned a lot from you, Emmeline. Watching you play and how you revolve your stories around the song, that has been a big part of my performing and also your crowd participation, because I never know how to say it, ever. I'm like, yes, guys, yes, sing. I feel like a preschool teacher when I'm trying to get people to sing with me, but no, you've taught me how to do that in the right way.
Thank you so much. Oh, you're going to make me cry. Oh. I appreciate that. No, that means a lot. I think it's scary, but I don't know. When I'm in an audience, I love being part of the music.
Yeah, me too. It's fun.
And I think that's what's so beautiful about the jokes that you crack. And you're a performer who has no facades on stage. Like, you walk on stage and you are 100% who you were when you were off stage.
Yeah.
I love
no
that.
No mercy.
No, but that's what is beautiful about that, though, is when people connect with you as a performer, they're connecting with who you are, not yep. who you're pretending to be.
Yes.
And the authenticity that you have as a songwriter. I mean, you lay things bare in this song, and you lay things bare vocally in the same way that you do lyrically, which I really appreciate. So I want to talk to you about some vocal choices in a minute, but I think that authenticity is part of what helps create audience participation, because you connect with them. You take the time to talk to them. I mean, I've been to shows where people don't say anything. They just get up on stage and they play their songs and they leave.
Yes.
And that can be compelling in a certain way because there's some mystery surrounding that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not cool enough to have any mystery. So I can't do that.
I definitely talk way too much.
I don't think that's true at all.
Like, I just couldn't. I love talking. And I feel like I would get off stage and feel like, I don't know, I have a really bad resting face. So if I'm not getting into my songs and I'm just sitting up there just being mysterious, it's going to look like I'm angry at everybody in the room.
So you're like, I'm not mad. I love you.
I have to just, you know, let it shine.
But I love that, because I think what it means is that when you step onto a stage, you're giving all of yourself. You're not holding anything back.
No, people want to see the real authentic you. That's what they're going to relate to. They don't want some ripoff Walmart version. No hate to Walmart. I love you, but they don't want that. And they want to see who you are. Because if a person is coming back to see your shows, they're not coming to see somebody sing some covers. They're coming to see you sing some covers. They're not looking for anybody. They're coming for you because they're your fan. Like, they don't want to come and see whatever my alternative ego name could be. They want to see Remy Riley.
We should definitely come up with a Remy Riley alternative ego. We should,
for my resting face days, we should come up with an alter ego so I can say, blame it on her and not me.
The things that I've always loved about you as a performer, though, I don't think you talk too much. I think it's great because it's another way in which you connect to the audience.
Oh, yes.
And when you step up with No Facade, you give people, whether consciously or unconsciously, you give people permission to show up as themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's part of what makes people feel comfortable coming up and saying things to you, like, you're an asset to the human race.
Oh, yeah. That, oh my gosh. I was like, what? Really? I was like, no way.
You're like, can you write that down so I can put it on my fridge?
No, for real. I was like, oh my God. Wanted to cry. But no, I feel like I have like severe anxiety, and I feel like as a performer it needs to be talked about more, because like, well, not talked about more, it's talked about a lot, but like, I mean, in like humans, like, it's okay to have anxiety. Like, you're not alone.
I think it's funny that you mentioned audience participation as something that I do at shows and talking to the audience, because I started talking to the audience for exactly that reason. I was super nervous.
Yeah.
Like the first show, I was super nervous. And I had this theory before I went on stage, which was, if I can make them laugh, I can make them friends. And if I can make them friends, it won't be scary.
Exactly. You did say that at your opening, Cafe Bohemia gig. One thing I really admired, I came to one of your shows there and the room was packed. There was not a seat open. And there was... there were people standing up everywhere, and every time a new customer would come in, you would ask them their name and you would include them in the show and say that they were your new friend. And I really, really admired that. And I was like, wow, I want to be like that. Like, I want to be that welcoming to an audience, because you don't just sing for them. It's like you're bringing them a part of your stories, and it's kind of a beautiful thing, which is revolves around the song No One Knows. It's like, it's that comfort. It's that same theme around this whole conversation, is that comfort in other people.
Exactly. And that connection. I mean, in really sort of getting into this song, I watched every performance of this on YouTube that I could find, which makes me sound a little bit like a creepy stalker.
No, but, not at all.
But I'm okay with that. I'm okay because I love you, Remy, and I support you. Oh. So if you guys haven't, I'll link in the show notes the live performance of this that happened at your EP release, actually.
Yes. Oh. What a day. I cried at that one too.
It was really beautiful because you were surrounded by people.
I was.
But you surrounded yourself. There wasn't a stage physically separating you from the audience. You were sort of in the middle of them.
Yeah, I was at the studio, Modern Electric.
Right. And you're in this chair and everybody's seated on the floor around you. And it is a really inclusive environment. And the way that you sing this song there, especially, you have your eyes closed, but you have specific moments where you open your eyes and you will look at a specific audience member and then you close them again. And you've sort of invited them both physically and emotionally into this space with you and said, look, this sucked for me. Like, this was not the best experience. Like, you're going to see a lot of pain on my face for the next 2.5 minutes. But you can hear people making that connection in the room.
Yeah.
Like everybody, and this happens every time you play, you start playing and people, you know, because we play in restaurants, we play in bars, we play in coffee shops. You hear that couple minutes of like silverware clinking and people chattering. And then halfway through like the first song that Remy plays, everybody gets quiet and starts to turn around. And it's like, who is this girl? And slowly but surely they get sucked in, and they get sucked in because you have this incredibly emotional, authentic vocal approach to what you do.
I really appreciate that.
Blowing smoke. It's the truth. And I think what's so special about this particular live video at Modern Electric is you can see that happen. Like, you can see everybody turn and you can see that moment. But you really hold out nose in this song.
Yeah.
And you're tasteful with your vocal runs. Like, there are some artists who like to throw them in everywhere because they can.
Yeah.
But I feel like for you, they always have an impetus.
Yeah.
So what was the first line of this song that you wrote? And was it the chorus?
It was weird. This song kind of just came out as, it just came out like just out of my mouth. Just the first line was the first line. It was, give me new eyes, still won't change my mind. I wrote the whole verse. And when I got to the point where I was like, okay, it's time for a chorus, I just was like, no one knows. Like, this is just how I feel. That's it. And that's what the chorus was. That's all the chorus is no one knows. But held out, like you said.
Yeah. Well, in this really beautiful way where you kind of sail melodically through that feeling of ruefulness almost.
Yeah.
Over the course of that particular melody. Like that sinking feeling that you get when you realize you're alone is the sinking of that melodic line. And I think that's a really beautiful illustration.
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you. Oh my God. She got it. That's how I feel too.
I'm glad. Okay, I'm glad.
I feel that too when I sing. That's like when you said the line that hits the most for me. It really is the most simple line. It sometimes is the most simple things. It's the darnest things.
It's funny. I love that you said that because one of the things, so in my daily life, quote unquote, mm-hmm. one of the things that I do is teach English, and I teach English to undergraduates. And there's this myth when you go to college that everything you do has to sound smart. Yeah. And I feel that myth. Like if you're an academic writer or if you're in school and you're writing for any reason, I feel you because I'm a doctoral student. I'm having to write a dissertation and I feel like it all has to sound smart. Mm-hmm. But as a songwriter, I think we also feel like we have to write something innovative and creative, and it has to be new and witty and clever. But so often when we're performing, it's the simple line that we connect with the most and that other people connect with.
It's so true. It's so strange.
Yeah. So why do we, I mean, I love your line about redirecting the time. You know, I think lost time is a theme that comes up a lot when we think about love, especially because I feel like society is really good at putting a time limit on relationships. Like you only have this much time to find your partner before you're out of luck.
Which is so not true.
And so detrimental when you're entering into a relationship, because then you enter into it with all this extra pressure.
Exactly. And then you try to rush it or make it perfect. And it's like, no.
Yeah, there's always some arbitrary timeline, right? Like it doesn't have to be marriage. Sometimes it's like, oh, here's an like I need a date for prom. I need a date for prom yesterday.
You are not a history textbook. Do not limit yourself to timelines. Like, you know, you just gotta let it just live. And no one knows.
Remember that no one knows what the timeline looks like. Exactly. And then no one knows if their timeline is correct. So beware when other people are imposing them on you.
You know, life is it's a beautiful thing. And that your time for each thing will happen when it needs to happen. It's like, I don't know what's out there that makes that work, but it just does. Just does.
So people ask you a lot because you started very young as a songwriter and as a performing songwriter. I'm sure people ask you a lot, oh, how did you start writing songs? But I guess what I'll ask you is a little bit different in that, did you start writing first or did you find that you found emotional resonance with an instrument first and then the words came?
I started writing first. I was 5 years old when I wrote my first song and it was called Happy Spaceman. And it was Happy Spaceman, Happy Spaceman. And it was like about this astronaut and him going through all the planets. And my mom really liked it. My dad thought it was, everybody thought it was cute. I was like 5. And then I wrote this song called, right after that, Breaking the Heart of Love. And I told my mama, I said, I'm not going to get my heart broken. I'm going to break hearts. And my dad and my mom just go, oh my Lord. What is our child? What did we do? And then the song that my parents tell me that they knew that I was gonna continue to write songs is this song called What's Wrong With Me, which I think I should bring it back to tell this story and to redo it because it's interesting. I was 5 years old and I wrote about a guy who couldn't get a girl and he was asking himself what is wrong with him. You know, a lot of these times I saw all these girls are always saying like, oh, what's wrong with me? I can't get this guy. Like, I'm not pretty enough. There's this beauty standard. But we never think about the guys. It must be hard for them too when they're thinking about that. So I wrote that song called What's Wrong With Me. And ever since that day, I just kept writing songs. And it went from Happy Spaceman to What's Wrong With Me in a matter of seconds. And the depth just kept going. I always saw something to write about. And then I learned how to play instruments later at 11. I played drums and then it just kept tumbling from there.
So for you, it started as a way to tell a story.
Oh yeah. I love stories and I love making things up. I always was writing books as a kid. Writing's my favorite currently speech is my favorite class. So yeah, I love writing stuff.
That's really cool. And I think that that's an important takeaway, right? Is that ultimately a really good song is just a really good story.
It is.
Whether, to your point, it's your story or someone else's story.
For sure.
Or a story that you saw in someone else.
Very true.
That they might not have seen in themselves. So No One Knows is available on all streaming platforms. People can find it everywhere. Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio has a Remy Riley radio station that people can listen to.
Ooh.
But Amazon, all kinds of things. And that amazing performance of you and Modern Electric, just you and a guitar, is available on YouTube. When you went into the studio, how did you decide to flesh this song out?
I told the producer of this song is Jason Burt over at Modern Electric. He's incredible. And Jordash Grant, who is an amazing piano player, like one of the best I've ever seen. Love him. And I told them, I said, Jason, this needs to be a slow but fast song. He was like, okay, that helps. And that's exactly what he did. He made it nice and mellow. He got those little train track kind of beat behind it, Jordash did, and a little shaker. And it was this sense of reassuring, this kind of comforting sound that came out. And it was very plain. Not plain. It was, well, kind of. There wasn't too much going on in the song, which is what I wanted. I wanted the production to be a little bit less bare than the rest of my songs that are also kind of out there. And I wanted it to capture what I was feeling. And it captured it perfectly. That lonely, but reassuring, comforting feeling. It just captured it so well. And I think that's the beauty of going in there and talking with producers and stuff.
One of the things I love about the way you've recorded this, and our listeners are going to get to hear it at the end of our chat. They're going to get to hear the fully produced version so you can see exactly what Remy and Jordash did with it. But one of the things that I love about the percussion behind it is it has this sense of time moving on.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the song itself is a snapshot of that sort of despairing moment where you're like, I will never love again. Like, this is going to be like,
oh my gosh, I'm an 8th grade, 14-year-old child who just is never going to find love.
I think every breakup feels that way at one point, though. There's always a moment in a breakup where you think, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I don't want to do this again.
Yeah, like, you're like, I will never give my heart away.
That's kind of me right now. I'm like, get away. I'm like, get away.
Well, there are seasons in our life, right? When, and I think this is one thing that I think is a really important thing to say. And you mentioned this at the beginning, right? That you're like, you're in a relationship with your guitar.
Oh, yeah.
As a musician, you know, we have a career in a very different way than most people have a career, because we don't ever hang our hat at the end of the day. Like, work doesn't stop for us.
No.
You know, like, it's not like 5 o'clock and we're like, woohoo, I'm leaving.
Oh my gosh.
Like, it might be 5 o'clock in the morning and we've been up all night and we're like, no, I just have to finish this song. You don't understand. There's one line left and I don't know what it is.
Yes.
But it never stops. And at least my brain, I don't know if that's the way your brain works.
No, it doesn't. It was funny. We were in the middle of class and everybody was going through their jobs. Like, some people were like saying, oh, what do you do? Oh, I work at an ice cream shop. Oh, I work at an AutoZone. And they got to me. I said, Remy, what do you do? I said, I'm a musician. And this one kid from the back of the class, I kid you not, screams out, freelancer. And I look back and I'm like, well, not wrong.
You're like, no, lady boss.
Lady boss. Try again. But I couldn't stop laughing. And the teacher was like, just not having it. But it was...
But that's such a testament to the way our industry is misperceived sometimes. The smartest thing I ever heard from somebody about freelancing, quote unquote, versus having a job as a permanent employee somewhere is, no matter what, you're a freelancer. But when you have one job, you have one client. You're a freelancer with one client.
Exactly.
If a venue for which we play shuts down, that is horrible and it sucks and it's awful and we grieve that venue. But it doesn't mean we won't work the next day.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it's horrible to watch a venue you love get shut down, especially during COVID. A few of them have.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not like you're going to quit music.
No, and it's not like you won't have anywhere to play the next day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Whereas,
girl, you know, boss.
Yeah, lady boss. That's what you say next time.
I will.
I'm my own boss. Trying.
Although
to be
I don't feel like that'll ever happen again. That was a one. That was really funny. I'm not gonna lie.
I don't know. As someone who's been playing music for a while, you get a lot of disparaging remarks sometimes, where people are like, "Oh, an artist." That's my favorite. My favorite word is interesting. That's
me too.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, it's always said in that voice.
That's interesting. Well, yeah, I we do get looked down upon a lot.
Sometimes it happens, but you know, you also get the other end of the spectrum that I think is really beautiful, where people are like, "Oh, I wish I'd been a musician."
Yeah, that there's always that, or there's like, "That's what I wish I could be."
Yeah, it's like people either look at you like a unicorn or a failure. You are a unicorn, or you are, a
or you're a failure.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Write a song about that.
Oh my gosh, unicorn or failure. You decide. A new board game by Remy Riley.
Spaceman.
Oh, you know what? We're going to have to put out that board game, the musician board game, Unicorn or Failure by Emmeline and Remy Riley.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We can have journeys. You can get quarantined.
The journey
in the studio.
Of a song board game.
You heard it here first, friends.
You guys.
Journey of a song board game where you either end up a unicorn or a failure.
Or a failure.
But don't worry. Just like life, you can always play again.
That's great.
Oh, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to design the board game.
Yes.
Remy, it is always such a pleasure to see your face, my friend, and always such a joy to play with you. It has been an honor to get to watch you grow as a performer these many years. And I am so excited because the next thing that happens is our audience is going to get to hear your song. But first, if people are listening and they think, oh my gosh, I love Remy. I love her energy. She sounds like just the coolest person. I want us to be friends and I want to hear all of her music. Where is the best place for people to follow you?
The best place is Spotify, Apple Music. I'm also on SoundCloud. Don't know how. And YouTube, all those places, all that good jazz.
And you're also pretty active on Instagram. People can also find you on Instagram at Remy Riley, and people can find you on Facebook at Remy Riley Music. So it's facebook.com/Remy Riley Music. And if people are local, if they are listening to us on Deep Ellum Radio, or if they're listening to us from Dallas Fort Worth, they can come out to Grandscape on Thursday, May 20th, and check out your first full band show of the year.
I'm so excited. Yes.
It's a joy. I feel like we've sort of bookended quarantine together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like our first show that we were supposed to play when COVID hit got canceled. And so we took it online. And now live music is slowly starting to come back. And it's really a beautiful thing. It was a pleasure to play with you on Saturday. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and talk about your process.
Thank you so much for having me, Emmeline, and Deep Ellum Radio.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime. And I know you have some new music coming out, so it might not be that long. We might see you again very soon.
I would love to. I'm so excited for y'all to hear it.
Yay! But before then, would you like to introduce No One Knows?
This is a song of finding the comfort in and not knowing of the abyss. This is No One Knows by Remy Riley.
Change my mind, redirect the time, but his face doesn't come across these lines. Why does everything turn into war, babe? Making my friends enemies, try to come back, but you bore me. Still seem to ignore these expressions lighting up on my face. Take it, but that won't do anything. This isn't what you told me. Why wasn't I your own? No one knows. Singing no.
Thanks so much for joining me for this week's episode of Journey of a Song, featuring the passionate, effervescent Remy Riley. To follow Remy's journey and to hear more of her music, find her on Spotify or Apple Music. You can also find her on Instagram at Remy Riley or on Facebook at facebook.com/Remy Riley Music. That's R-E-M-Y-R-E-I-L-L-Y. For behind-the-scenes glimpses and more about Journey of a Song, follow me on Instagram at Emmeline Music. That's at E-M-M-E-L-I-N-E Music. Don't forget to check out my other podcast, Journey of an Artist, wherever you listen to podcasts. Journey of a Song airs Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on Deep LM Radio, and each episode is available as a podcast the very next day. Discover new music and hear fascinating stories with me, Emmeline, every Friday on your favorite podcast app. If you're enjoying the show, please don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. This is only the beginning, and I don't want you to miss a single minute of these inspiring conversations. If a picture is worth a thousand words, a song is worth a thousand stories.